Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, your weekend sports car show. Graham Goodwin, I am staring out of what is best described as a bungalow about 1 mile away from Sebring International Raceway. It is Tuesday morning at 9:49 a.m. I am delighted is the word, but I'll just use it anyways. Delighted to tell you, staying in a little bungalow, there's a vast retirement community immediately south of the racetrack, where it is a bunch of fine pensioners, retirees, and so on. Little golf courses here. And it's also, if you're a fan of history, like stepping back to 1983. Why? There is no internet in this house. And I don't just mean no Wi-Fi. I mean no internet connections of any sort. There is no
bliss. Cable. Bliss.
Yes. No cable. What does that mean? You get primary channels here in America, like when I was a child, that would be ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox now, PBS, the public broadcasting system or service, and then one or two local channels, of which they ran all last night a marathon of the fine procedural shows Criminal Minds, which, if you've ever seen the show, it is a crime. And then something called FBI, which I am proud to report that, having consumed three episodes in the background while writing, it's the same show, every show, just with slightly different bad people. So, anyways.
So it's not Ferrari, BMW, Isotta. That's not one that's good for.
Not yet. No, unfortunately. But I mentioned these things for a reason. Rather than being able to connect through internet-based means and also to do things in the standard that we're used to, I'm having to use my phone, which is on about a quarter of a bar, and we are using Skype to record this, which we haven't done for a while. And for the first time, I'm using my AirPods. So I apologize if the audio isn't as crisp as usual, but I'm doing my best while stepping back many decades in terms of technology, but that's where I'm at. How are you doing? Where are you at?
I'm good. I'm still in the UK. So, I mean, heads up, not coming to Sebring. So lots of stuff going on the home fronts. So I'm at home and attending to all of that. Stephen Kilby, RJ O'Connell, and the rest of the DSC gang are making their way towards Sebring. So you'll be able to hear the approach of thundering hooves within the next 12 hours or so.
I believe that was Stephen Stripper name in college, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dear me. He was thrilled this morning to wake up to hear that his flight had been cancelled, but all is good. He's on an alternative flight and is probably about now, just about over the Atlantic. So he'll be with you presently, as they say.
Being carried by storks on that flight land.
But what I would say is, it's been quite a couple of weeks, hasn't it? You've got Sebring turning up, coming up, another blue ribboned event in this, you know, the, what do we call it? We call it the Florida 36 hours. In the wake of the season opener for the WEC. And then yesterday evening, we could finally take off the covers of a story that you have known about for a pretty long time. We've known about for a pretty long time. I think we start with that, don't we, MP?
We do. Quickly, though, but with great respect, we say thank you to some dear friends.
Time to say a big thank you to our show partners on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, starting with FAF Technologies, build-to-print composites manufacturing company. They're specializing in medium to large-scale automotive, motorsports, and military applications. Visit FAFTechnologies.com. It's P-F-A-F-F Technologies.com to learn more about their services and how they can benefit your business. Next, it's the Justice Brothers, makers of premium additives, lubricants, and cleaners, and servicing the automotive and motorsports industries for more than 85 years, with victories in all the biggest North American motor races. including the Indianapolis 500, the 24 Hours of Daytona. The Justice Brothers products are truly race-proven. Learn about their vast history and range of offerings at justicebrothers.com. If you're fond of awesome motor racing collectibles, including Pfaff Motorsports McLaren gear and goodies, pay a visit to torontomotorsports.com. And finally, we have a new online merchandise home for the podcast, thepruittstore.com, for all the show stickers, models, racing memorabilia I'm trying to sell and put towards our fund to buy a house is now live and rocking. thepruittstore.com.
Thanks once again to all of our show partners who indeed take great care of us. So thankfully, we have our friend Daniel Summersgill, who collects the questions from our dear listeners and presents them in a entertaining fashion. Also occurred to us, Graham, looking at some of the questions, that some folks read the headline and then sent in questions without reading the story. Some folks might be brand new to this and are learning about it for the first time, and others just looking for more color. Why don't we start off by painting the overall picture of what has happened here, and then we can drill into some of the minutiae. Can tell you, I first heard about this possibility of Chip Ganassi Racing, which fields the factory Cadillac Racing IMSA GTP effort, and also in your FIWEC. Started hearing that this two-year relationship, this two-year contract, which was signed, started in 2023, run through 2024, was up for bid. That's not abnormal, right? We know Acura, same thing is going on right now. Two-year deal with the Wayne Taylor with Andretti program here in IMSA. That is understood to be out for bid for those who might take it over in 2025, or, as you and I have heard, most likely going to stay exactly where it is for 2025 and beyond. But had been hearing the possibility of Ganassi's single car IMSA Cadillac and also their single car WEC Cadillac going to other teams. I started hearing that around the end of December. Went into the Roar Before the 24, middle-ish of January, Rolex 24 immediately following, and heard more things throughout the paddock, started to hear some names of their rivals who were bidding on such a thing, and it seemed to draw a pretty clear picture, Graham, that we were not in a normal situation of manufacturer doing its normal due diligence, hearing from a lot of other teams, seeing what they had to offer, weighing all of those proposals and saying, hey, at some point later in the year, we'll look at these and decide whether we stay with our current provider or go elsewhere. The tone that I was getting back, the comments that I was getting back, made it pretty clear Cadillac was looking to move on.
Yep, I'd agree.
Now, there's another, the flip side to that, which I can't yet tell you what is the most accurate version of this. But the flip side to that I've been hearing was the Chip Ganassi Racing team might be looking to move on. Seeds of discord between both sides. I haven't really heard that so much, right? So what I don't want to do is feed any false narratives of, oh boy, highly contentious relationship. Both could not wait to get away from one another. And that's what we are seeing. Have not heard that at all.
Is it?
But I have heard, again, Cadillac looks like they could be leaving. Also heard the Ganassi team might be looking to end the relationship here and hopefully replace it with another manufacturer. Only heard this growing more and more in February, had made the team aware that I'd been hearing this quite a bit. And last weekend in St. Petersburg, opening IndyCar race of the season where I happened to be, team said, hey, I know you've been sitting on this. We're willing to talk. Understood that everyone between the team and GM were aligned or had communicated, however to phrase that correctly, Graham. But did that interview, I believe, Sunday, and got that written up once I arrived here in Sebring late Monday afternoon, and then the entire team was notified on Monday, right? Obviously, you don't want the team to read about this through a story first, if at all possible. So the team informed IMSA side, WEC side in Germany, and then said, okay, we're fully alerted. Everybody within the program, go ahead and run the story. So that procedurally is what happened. This is something for sure, as you and I have spoken about this many, many times over the last couple of months, kept waiting to hear if there were any kind of changes. Hey, nope. It's going to be a continuation of the relationship. Had heard, hey, a formal decision might be coming in May leading into Le Mans. Yep. So that's where I had my head on the timing of this becoming official in whatever direction it would go. And again, learned just a day or two ago that ready to let the world know, in the obvious hope, Graham, that another manufacturer will say, well, that's a mighty fine racing team right there to engage with. We know that we can and should start speaking with them now to hopefully do work with them in 2025.
Yeah. I think that's a reasonable solution for our part of the other side. As I said, there's a lot more detail that we have, and we are being kind of quite careful about what we say and how we say it and when we say it. And we've been engaging with, I think it's fair to say, just about all parties involved here, MP, across both WEC and IMSA programs. Timing is never ideal. Timing's never ideal, and that timing did indeed happen for us in the UK pretty late evening yesterday. Fairly clear that has come as a major surprise to an awful lot of people out there. And I'll say this much, by the way, fairly clear that that's the case for our listeners as much as anybody else. Fairly clear, too, that I think you and I are pretty clear that both your story and the story that Stephen Kilby wrote for Daily Sports Car to follow on with a bit more detail on another couple of fronts was reasonably clear. But it's fair to say, even reading the questions that we've got, there's a degree of confusion about what this means. And I think I'd put it out here straight away. Genuinely, guys and girls, read the stories, read it carefully. Words, particular for stories like this that have got such an impact on so many people in our industry, are written very carefully indeed. So the words that we write really matter, and that's what we've chosen to put out there publicly. And if there are questions, most of the answers you're going to find are within those words, and there's one or two bits and pieces I'm sure that we can add a little bit of clarity to here. But pretty clear from an awful lot of the commentary on social media last night, pretty clear from a few of the questions we've received in time to this show this morning. And to be blunt, pretty clear from the follow-on stories from a number of our journalistic colleagues that they just don't get it as to what exactly this is. So I think that's what we probably move on to first, MP, is to try to clear up any bits and pieces that we can based on some of the questions that Daniel's collated for us today. So where should we start?
Well, before we get to the questions, because again, this does apply to some of what's about to follow, the number one question is why?
Yes.
We've broken the news that this is happening.
Yep.
So an event has taken place where this partnership is going to dissolve at the end of the season in IMSA and WEC.
Yeah.
But why? In areas that you and I think we have good insight into.
Yep.
Also, not an area where team or manufacturer is particularly interested in providing answers on their own, just upfront.
Yep. Fair enough. Yep.
Responding to when asked. So fair enough. Again, keep in mind, willing and happy to say, relationship is coming to an end. Not so interested in filling in the why or how, but I can share this part. Not claiming this to be the answer or that there is a single answer. Could be multiple reasons. But I do know it's a coveted contract.
Yep.
This is major, overstating the obvious here, major international auto manufacturer does nothing in half measures. They are a supremely committed partner in all forms of motor racing, NASCAR, IndyCar, you name it, drag racing, anywhere General Motors goes, they go hardcore. That also means that they invest heavily into the things they do with their factory partners. Would just say, why is this no longer continuing? Keep in mind, with that contract being up for bid and the value of being the supreme General Motors Cadillac partner, that is something that any and every other team in IMSA, those who are in IndyCar, NASCAR, you name the series, there are no boundaries to those who would pursue this contract for 2025. So if you think about how coveted that is, something we also know, Graham, extends to WEC, right? So this is folks pursuing this contract on a domestic and international front. There's not only going to be a stampede of other teams trying to get this, and also say you and I have witnessed in IMSA in the last year or two, one major manufacturer contract, pretty heavy efforts to undermine, to say, hey, stop dating them, come marry us. Yeah. That's normal, okay? That's not unique to IMSA. That's in every form of racing, period.
It's in every form of business, let's face it. It's
Put your little radars and antennas in that direction as one of them. That's the main thing I've been heard. Hey, wow, there are some hardcore efforts to take that from Ganassi and make it someone else's. I've also heard, and this would make sense, Graham, if you look at the two partners Cadillac has had in IMSA, Ganassi and Action Express Racing, since this GTP formula debuted here 14 months ago, you've had Action Express Racing win the championship for Cadillac in its first try. Also say that team has been more successful in general. If you look at last year's championship standings, we're just strictly going on who has achieved what in the relationship so far between the two service providers in IMSA. Might look at Action Express as the one where, if you were going to consolidate your program going forward, having them run two cars in 2025, which has been the other component I've heard, Graham, dating back to, again, I think December, all points of indication have said to me, this is something where Action Express will most likely be running a two-car Cadillac program next year, in the same way where in 2023, Acura had two single-car efforts between Meyer-Shank Racing, WTR, Andretti, and consolidated both cars under the WTRA banner this year. Think in those lines. I believe that's where things are headed. Could be wrong. But I've spoken to some of the other IMSA teams that have pursued this Cadillac program, and the feedback they've given me is, we put our name in the hat, but we don't expect it to get pulled out of the hat. They all expect this to go to Action Express as well. So based on Action Express's delivery of results and whatnot with that championship last year, none of this to me, Graham, would stand out as anything that's truly out of the ordinary. The only part that we might not get anyone really speaking heavily on is I've continued to hear behind the scenes that, wow, there's been a knockdown, drag out fight to become GM's one and only when it comes to Cadillac here in the US. So will we get a full answer as to why from either side in the future? No. Wouldn't hold out hope, but hopefully some of what we just shared there, at least on the IMSA front, give you an indicator of, okay, I can, all right, maybe that's some of the reasoning why. But you and I have also, you in particular, have been hot on the heels of European developments, Graham, knowing that there is a WEC hypercar aspect to this as well. And there is, using the official measurement standard of the Week in Sports Cars podcast, a heck of a bunch of teams who want to supplant the Stuttgart, Germany-based Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac program and make it their own.
Well, let's talk about that and give full credit to Stephen Kilby for what he's been doing in the background in a highly professional and confidential way. You are absolutely right. There are indeed a heck of a bunch of teams that would be interested in this. We are as fully across as I think we possibly could be where things stand on that front, and we are not ready to go any further than that. The one thing I will say, and it sort of answers some of the questions that we got today, is look, as far as we can assess it today, it looks like that the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship will retain two full-season Cadillacs, and it looks like the WEC will gain a Cadillac, that we will be talking about two full-season entries for WEC as well. So that is good news. That is a consolidation, a further consolidation of what the factory has decided is giving them value. Is this linked into any other major motorsport program? Everything's linked to everything when you talk about budgets. But is this directly linked into the F1 debacle? No, it's not. Is their motorsport strategy dependent on what does or doesn't happen in F1? No, it's not. GM is and will remain involved in a huge range of motorsport programs. What this indicates, as far as I can see, and as far as I'm being sort of guided, is that they feel they're getting good value for the investment that's going into sports car racing at the moment. And that is really good news. You know, in an era where they're embarking onto their very first GT3 customer program, in an era where the numbers are spiraling for top class, how long might that last? We don't know. But at the moment, it looks to me, MP, as if our friends at General Motors are looking to ride that wave. And I'm delighted that that's the case. On the questions around, do we know if CGR is leaving here or doing that? I think you've answered that adequately, which is they are, as far as I can see, MP, in an active search for a new partner to stay in sports car racing, correct?
Yeah, and why don't we can run through a lot of the questions here somewhat quickly. So our pal Corey, at GTP Enjoyer, good old X, says, what does Ganassi do? Is their time in IMSA temporarily over? Little additional context here, Graham, which, boy, I think about the many incredibly fine men and women who have worked at Chip Ganassi Racing on their sports car side, their DPI effort, which predated this, the factory Ford GT program, which predated that, the Ford Daytona prototype effort before then, and so on. This team, based in Indianapolis, the primary hub, that is where their IndyCar and their IMSA program runs out of. If you just count back a couple of years, Grant, Chip Ganassi Racing had a two-car NASCAR Cup program running out of North Carolina, entered Extreme E, right, the off-road all-electric series in partnership with GM, GM's brand Hummer was the branding on that, but that was a full GM factory involvement there. Their 3 to 4 car IndyCar program, and then 1 to 2 IMSA top tier prototype efforts. When we get to the end of this season, if there are no manufacturers signed and ready to continue the IMSA program, they will have their IndyCar effort as their lone remaining motor racing team. Potentially, again, in the span of the last 3 to 4 years, will have gone from 4 major championships. I take it back, add WEC as well. Again, I just think of their sports car in kind of a single silo, but regardless, you want to think of the places where they have been, potentially it could be down to no NASCAR, no Extreme E, no sports cars, and just IndyCar. That's not how that organization is built, meaning it is a large, large team, tons of infrastructure. They need something to fill in this void. So what do they do, as Corey asks? They work like heck to find a manufacturer to continue, I would say, at minimum in IMSA. That is what Chip Ganassi Racing Managing Director Mike Hull told me in our interview. IMSA is where they're really looking first to find a new partner. Only other item to add there, obviously, we'd love to say, hey, Alpine, welcome to IMSA GTP, right?
Yep.
You're going to be Ganassi's new partner. I have been told by 2 team owners who've gone as far as they believe they could go on that topic with Alpine, who've told me within the last couple of weeks that thing, at least in the U.S., is dead as a doornail. Nothing happening, nothing going on. Could that change in the future? Of course. As an actionable manufacturer for 2025, I've heard there is nothing there. So is there another manufacturer you and I know of in background that's going to announce their thing next year and partner with a Ganassi or whomever? I feel confident in saying no. There are the other programs, if we're just looking at IMSA, let's run through them. So we have the aforementioned Acura. One of the questions I've gotten from a lot of folks, Graham, is, oh, well, Michael Andretti, Formula One.
Cadillac.
Of course, this is where the program's going, right? And again, it would make sense if there was a fully announced Andretti Global Cadillac Formula One program that had been accepted by F1. If it were a thing that were alive and happening, I think we could say, boy, well, it surprised me if there wasn't full alignment with Cadillac in IMSA as well. There is no Andretti Formula One team with Cadillac at the moment. I don't expect any change there. They would be silly to give up the Acura deal in the hope of getting the Cadillac one, especially since we expect here, at least in the U.S., for Action Express to be that their new paramour. So that leaves BMW.
Yep.
BMW historically has done 1-year deals. They revisit on an annual basis, put out those requests for proposals / quotes, make their decision. They end up and keep ending up with BMW Team RLL. They call themselves an IMSA BMW M Team RLL. I'd be surprised if BMW were to leave. Is there a possibility? Of course, there's always a possibility, but I would put this, Graham, at somewhere around 0%.
Yep.
The last option here that we know of the existing programs, I realize that's going to change here in a couple of days with Lamborghini coming on board, but of those that have been in GTP since year one, that would be Porsche Penske Motorsport. Is Porsche putting that contract up for bid? I feel pretty confident saying no. As long as Roger Penske wants to run that, I feel safe in saying, brother, that will always be
a and here's the thing is and they're winning on both sides of the pond. So at the moment, you're absolutely right. For every sensible reason, that's just not going to be a goer.
And it would be silly to think that Lamborghini would cut bait with Iron Lakes before they've turned a single lap in competition over here with the new SC63 GTP car. So among the current options, I don't see any of them moving to Ganassi. So that, to me, Graham, tells me I would think Chip Ganassi would be speaking to all of the factories playing in GTD Pro, knowing how well they did and how much success they had with the Ford GT program, including winning on debut in 2016 in the GT in GT class at Le Mans, 50th anniversary of their first win with the old Ford GT40s and such. So that's where my eye goes. I don't think they're going to have anything for 25 on the prototype level. I bet they're talking or trying to crack open some doors on the GT front. Justin at J_Trock_71 says, did Ganassi moving to five cars and IndyCar play into the split with Cadillac? No, nothing to do with anything related to IndyCar that I'm aware of, Justin. You also say, will we see any Cadillacs in WEC in 2025? Yes, indeed. In my story, at least, I mentioned United Auto Sports is one team I know the Cadillac has spoken to. Also mentioned TF Sport. Also know that there's probably three or four others on that list as well. Ken Anderson, you ask a related question. Is Chip starting to regret his decision to run five Indy cars? Did Cadillac feel that Ganassi spread itself too thin? Again, no on that. And also coming back to the point of minus a manufacturer to continue in IMSA, Ganassi would have something like 50, potentially 50 redundant employees. That's brutal. That is brutal to think. And so by expanding from four to five Indy cars, they've actually been able to employ more folks. So I'm not saying they're going to expand to 10 Indy cars next year to make use of all their sports car personnel if they don't get another brand to represent. But yeah, very and totally different things. Keep in mind, this is the same Chip Ganassi Racing that won last year's IndyCar Championship. So how them being the best in that series and deciding to run one extra car would somehow trigger Cadillac to say, oh, that's too much. Like, I'd say they've demonstrated, at least on the open wheel side, they're the best there is. And many of the folks who run that side of things, Graham, also are centrally involved in running the sports car side. So this is a nothing burger of the highest order here. Jeremiah, you asked about, do they have anything lined up? We covered that off.
Can I take the one from Theo Cousins? What if CGR going back to Ford and turning them off all for GT into LMH, like Aston Martin are doing with the Valkyrie? That would explain the sudden Ganassi exit despite GM looking to expand the current program. No.
Love the lateral thinking here, Theo, for sure. But that's nothing.
For one thing, the Ford GT is no longer a production model. That's the first thing to actually say. So the answer there is absolutely 100% definitely no. That is not anywhere close to being either the reason behind this or the potential future. Ford, who knows? For my money, MP, any major manufacturer at the moment, looking at what is going on with the numbers that surround sports car racing right now, that is not already inside the GTP hypercar envelope, must be considering whether or not they need to look or look again. But, you know, that's not going to be 2025, is it?
No. We have Velo Nerd LMDI asking, you know, very significant question. A lot of folks are asking, what's going to happen to Ringer Vandezen? Sebastian Bourdais, Earl Bamber, Alex Lynn, those factory drivers from the 2025 season and beyond, all falls into the same approach here, right, Graham? Mm-hmm. They love, truly love, driving for Chip Ganassi. Let me rephrase that. Anybody who has been part of the sports car program since it was the DPI, particularly, and then moving on to GTP, all those factory drivers, whether they're dedicated full-time in IMSA or WEC, even if they're parachuting in from IndyCar, like Scott Dixon, Alex Palou, Marcus Ericsson last year, they loved it. I've heard none of them say, get me out of here. I want to leave this as quickly as I can. They're going to do collectively what I think you'd expect them to do, which is give Ganassi time.
Yep.
Now, are they going to wait 6 months? Are we going to get to September and they are then going to start talking to other teams and manufacturers? Of course not. These are folks with families and parents to look after, and they need their income just like we all do. So naturally, they are all going to reach out and explore their options. What I think we'll see here, compared to maybe some other times, Graham, where we've seen, oh, this program is coming to an end with this team, and the drivers and engineers and crew immediately are saying, I'm not waiting. Where can I go? What can I get lined up for next year? There's a finality the moment that announcement is made within the team. I think you're going to see a lot of patience exercised here. Ganassi tends to take really good care of their employees. These drivers, they're all signed to Chip, right? They're not signed to Cadillac. They're signed to him. Our French fry, Sebastian Bourdais, he doesn't want to go anywhere. Loves driving for them, working for them. He showed up last weekend, for example, Graham. Now, granted, he does live in nearby Tampa, St. Petersburg area, but he showed up all last weekend at the St. Petersburg IndyCar race, and was on the timing stand with IndyCar rookie Kiffin Simpson, who we also know as champion, ELMS as well, P2 and whatnot.
By the way, great result for him.
Yeah, exactly. But no one at Chip Ganassi Racing asked Sebastian to show up and be a coach, mentor, sounding board for Kiffin last weekend. He sat on the timing stand next to the debuting IndyCar race engineer Danielle Shepard. She had been GTP engineer and DPI before that for Chip, and also our friend Chris Wheeler making his debut as race strategist. And so Seb was on the timing stand, headset on, talking to them, sharing his insights, communicating with Kiffin, was there in the transporter with him all weekend long. No one from the team asked him to show up. It wasn't an extra paid thing that he did. This is just him being an amazing teammate, realizing here's a young kid who he likes, and hey, let me show up each day and be there to support him, and therefore potentially help my team do better in their first race with this kid in this fifth entry. He charged from 23rd to 14th, put in the second fastest lap of the race, only behind race winner Joseph Newgarden, and really made a strong impression. But I just share that story quickly because that's a different thing, right, Graham, than a hired gun. It might be a factory hired gun, but they just think of themselves as nomadic and they bounce around from this brand, that brand, or wherever else. You got folks at Ganassi who are going to wait for as long as they possibly can before, if nothing is announced that the team has found to continue, they're going to wait as long as they can before moving on, because none of them want to move on. But the underlying point is they all need to know how they're going to feed themselves and their families in 2025.
Yeah,
some hard decisions are going to be made unless Ganassi can take that decision away for them and say, you don't need to go anywhere. This is what we're doing next year if you want to stay with us. What else do you want to pick up here, brother?
I think, because I know you've got places to be at Sebring. Let's just have a quick kind of round robin through the rest of this stuff. This is where we are, you know.
Brian Cohn tells us, by the way, that CGR is going to become the new factory Glickenhaus GTP program, Brian. We'd love it. Carl Anderson asking if Marshank Racing is taking that over. I can confirm that that is not happening.
Mark Whiteleg asks, my question is the potential third GR07, third group. Do you think Toto will keep that within its well-known circle of teams or pick someone else outside that circle?
Yeah, right. You were telling me about this earlier, brother.
Yeah, but not a story that you or I have run. It's been run by some of our market rivals, but it's a valid story. No one's kind of shooting this down. But there is a difference here. Some people have read this story as if they're definitely going to do it. It's definitely going to be three, and they've had to raise their game because there's now three Ferraris and blah, blah. Not the case. Yeah, what this is, oddly enough, I mentioned it a bit earlier in the show. They're evaluating what the options are and what might give them better competitiveness. They're evaluating that. The other story that was doing the rounds is how long a life will the current platform, the current GR010, have if hydrogen in one form or another is on the still fairly distant horizon. So lots of questions being asked. Is there a program for a third car? No, there is not. Is it likely there will be a program for a third car? It's not out of the question, but if you were to ask anybody right now at TGR Europe in Cologne whether or not they could show you the budget sheet that shows sign-off, the answer is no, they can't. Is there a proposal or a prospect for that? I've zero doubt there is. In exactly the same way as we just discussed with Ford, everybody in motorsport, if you're sensible, reviews everything all the time. That's how the really clever people, the big teams like Ganassi and the big manufacturers, keep ahead of the curve. They keep on the technical groups and the rulemaking groups of just about everything. The fact they sit there does not mean they're going to enter. It means they want to hear and to have a say in future rules. So a third Toyota, it's a possibility. And I would suggest that's all it is right now. As to what Toyota would do with it, they'd have absolutely no problems whatsoever finding a taker for a, let's put it this way, likely part-funded hypercar program. None whatsoever, particularly because it's a winning platform. There's a couple of other questions, by the way, that ask about the performance of Toyota in the season opener at Qatar, where we had Kamui Kobayashi giving public comment to say they'd be lucky to get the points. Well, look,
Kamui is always so positive. That's the thing I love about him.
You're down. Oh, that's just a ray of sunshine right there.
He'd be pretty terrible in the Samaritans, wouldn't he? But I think what am I saying here? Am I saying that Toyota are hiding performance? I have no idea, is the honest answer. I have no idea. I find it difficult to believe that a team that was so utterly dominant in effectively the same car, there is no change the performance aspects of the GR010 for 2024, that they've become uncompetitive with the addition of 50 kilos. 50 kilos is a chunk. Let's be blunt. It's a chunk. But is it a lap? Not sure. It's a straight
answer. That was why it's a different name in college, by the way. Chunk. But
chunk. but not sure. I think there is hashtag wait and see on that front. This is an era where there is a lot to be gained by perhaps not showing everything you've got straight out of the box. So I'd be concerned about making any long-term choices based on what we've seen from the very first race. What else can you see in this lot?
Well, I'm just going to back up just a little bit just so we can answer these quickly. Waffle Fries, great screen name. Asking if there's been any developments regarding Marshank Racing with any new GTP programs of any kind. I don't like Ganassi. I don't see any real pathway for that to happen easily next year. Also asks any updates on Acura and HRC still wanting to do customer programs for the ARX 06s. That's another Graham Goodwin hashtag wait and see. Nothing out of them saying they're ready to do that next year, at least in IMSA. WEC, that's the place I would expect to see more Acura, or I should say more, to see Acuras first. But again, things I keep trying to figure out, don't necessarily get total direction on.
No, I think, there's all sorts of, are they a prospect? They most certainly are a prospect, and likely under the Honda brand rather than the Acura brand. Is there a program? No, there isn't. What we do know, and we know very specifically, is they absolutely have been assessing that as a viable prospect. But they have a variety of other priorities that they've got to get to first. One of which is, of course, there's a developing Formula One program, and that is a massively resource-hungry enterprise. The second one is that they need to get their RX 06 in IMSA trim ahead of the curve. They weren't there for a variety of reasons at the Rolex 24 Hours. Sebring could be really important on that front. If we can get this debate away from just talking about balanced performance into general performance, then maybe we've got a clearer picture as to how ready they would be to throw it into the current maelstrom of the FIWEC for 2025. But they're not yet there yet. Are they evaluating it, or have they evaluated it? Yes and yes.
Our pal Ryan Caminiti asks, do you think Lamborghini will finish with those bumps at Sebring this weekend, beat the heck out of that SC63 on its debut and send it back to the hauler? One of those great questions where you have no idea how to answer. And granted, if we'd been hearing, Graham, for months and months on end before the SC63 made its competition debut at Qatar, that it was just super problematic, breaking down constantly in testing, could barely complete a 2-hour test, much less a 24-hour test, we'd probably say, yeah, that's going to be in the transporters and gone long before the checkered flag. I haven't heard those things. I'm not saying they haven't had problems, just saying I have not heard the car is a well of poor reliability. So
no, I mean, I don't know. The car was pretty reliable in Qatar. It's very, very new. And what do we know about these cars when they're very, very new? The teams will initially struggle to get themselves ahead of systems issues. You know, there will be undoubtedly, minor kind of build design issues. Let's face it, we saw it at Daytona last year with the brand new Ferrari GT car, the 296 GT3, where it turned out there was a weakness in floor mountings that they just hadn't seen in testing at all. And there have been absolutely countless tests with the 296 GT3. It can catch them out. So I hope what we see from the Lamborghini side is they get lots and lots of miles. Do I think they're going to be ultimately competitive? No. I think it's very, very new. Do I think they could get that car to the finish? Yeah, I think they could. It's the straight answer. There's no real reason why they should not. The basic concept, let's face it, is pretty much the same as the other GTP cars. But what they're going to find at Sebring is they're going to find out whether or not they've got any weak points. And that's not the worst thing for them to find out this early in the program.
10-4. What else do we want to cover? We have a lot more questions that we can get to right now. I know Sean Broderick has one. Graham asking, what exactly was the number 93 Peugeot 908's, quote, fueling issue in Qatar? Was that a miscalculation?
I think it was a simple miscalculation. I doubt we're going to hear that from Peugeot, but I think it was a tragic miscalculation. That's what I believe to be the case. It is possible there was an equipment failure, whether or not that was an equipment failure on the rig itself, whether or not it was on the readouts that the fueler has actually got, whether or not it was to do with the timing that there was a miscommunication. But I think it was, let's put it this way, cock-up, not conspiracy. But what a real shame, because that car had been right there all day. And it's a real shame that the Tailless Wonder will likely finish its WEC life without that big result. And that would have been a great way to start the season for a team that's got the challenges of bringing in another new car in just a few weeks' time. So I think it was cock-up, not conspiracy.
Don is joined by our pal Daniel Ingleton, inquiring about Toyota's pace, right?
Yeah,
Prologue, they were out to lunch-ish, I apologize. You just take that.
Well, the one thing I'll say here is there is a new aspect to the way in which cars are inspected in the WEC as part of the balanced performance regime that should help to find that. Because amongst the things that, you know, I've sort of banded around, but, you know, they could just add weight and they could hard performance that way. Well, you sort of can't, because what the WEC are doing now is at the end of the race, they will assess the fastest of the two of the cars of that make. So one of the Totas will go through post-race tech, one of the Peugeots, one of the Ferraris. Wherever they finish, they will be examined. So there's not going to be that sort of thing that can be hidden quite as simply as people would have expected that it could have been. So, you know, they're really serious about trying to make this all-important balanced performance work. Toyota, it is going to be a hashtag wait and see. I'm not going to turn around and point the finger at, you know, the absolutely dominant force in hypercars to this point and say you're a bunch of liars. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is the difference in the pace. The difference in the pace is pretty extreme. Of course, this is a track that we've not got comparative data. And neither, by the way, will the next one be, because we've got a one-off going to Imola, where we've not been before. And there is an element here that knowing Toyota are the arch strategists in political terms, they are very capable of pulling a strategy, a political as well as a technical strategy, to try to turn the heads of those that could give them an opportunity to benefit from that. So are they prepared to burn points at the start of the season? Possibly, if they think they've got enough in the bank for later in the season to overhaul that deficit, more possibly. Am I accusing them of that? No, I'm not. And the reason I'm not doing that is because I don't have any data to back it up. So what I'm saying is, it is a possibility that actually there's some games being played. It wouldn't be the first, second, or 95th time that this has happened in sports car racing.
Where do we go here? What, maybe one or two to close? Andrew Miller, hey, you know, this is a gift that keeps on giving. I thought the WEC Qatar type was supposed to get the WC out of sea freight bottleneck business. Then why did cars get stranded on the Red Sea side of the Arabian Peninsula last month? Graham, WC is in a transitional stage of sea freight to air freight for now.
Well, I could explain that. So am I disappointed that those cars weren't air freighted? Not just the cars, the equipment wasn't air freighted there as part of the deal. I am disappointed that we had the delay. It made that a really difficult race meeting for everybody. To explain what happened, I think most people in the world are aware there were problems at the bottom end, if you like, of the Arabian Peninsula with Houthi rebels out of Yemen, interrupting free passage of freight. What's happened in this case is, as with a huge, absolutely enormous amount of incoming freight, not taking the risk of rounding that peninsula and going to the eastern side of the Arabian Peninsula, they're off shipping at ports on the western side. What does that mean? It means, in this case, in the port of Jeddah, they've been off shipped, come through the Suez Canal, shipped at Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, then 1,500 kilometers across Saudi Arabia into Qatar by road. That's so far so simple. The problem being is, of course, not just the WEC have opted to do that, but a huge number of other shippers, which means that at all those Western ports, you've got vast overspill of freight that is just providing a massive block to quick transit out. And that impacts on port facilities, storage facilities, transport facilities. And much as we'd love to be able to say, wouldn't we, that transporting the better part of a world championship with a grid equipment and cars across the peninsula is a priority, it's not as much of a priority as feeding people, as medical supplies, as humanitarian supplies with that variety of issues in that region. What went on, I saw some of it, was magnificent. It was governments coming together to solve a problem. It did mean that we had a significant delay to on-track proceedings, but luckily there was some downtime that had been built in between. In any case, everybody responded magnificently. It did mean that two or three of the teams started a little bit on the back foot. I'm looking at Proton Competition, where they had issues with bits and pieces for all of their cars. The Ford Mustangs weren't really given the best deal at Qatar. I think we'll see more from them in the future. But that's what happened. The cars and the kit are being air freighted back to principally to Europe in time for Imola, so we should not get a repeat of those. But that, ladies and gentlemen, is what you get when you're dealing with international freight of any kind in a conflict zone. It impacted all sorts of other things as well. And a great example of that, by the way, is that flights to the variety of places we go with the WEC have pretty extraordinary differences. And it's not just a case of prevailing winds. The flight to Qatar is about 5 hours, 50 minutes. The flight home from Qatar, because you're avoiding overflights from a variety of places, including Ukraine at the moment, is about a part of 7 hours. And it's more and worse, if you like, the further east you go. So all sorts of issues are impacting on what is already an incredibly difficult job on a team-by-team level. When you're dealing with it on a championship level, and a championship as packed as we are at the moment with high-quality teams with a lot of freight that needs to go, that right now is a discipline in motorsport that's worthy of giving up medals at the end of the season.
Got a decent amount of questions left, Graham. Do we say farewell there, or do you want to take one more from whomever?
I'm going to take one more because I just spotted it, and it's one I happen to be able to give the answer to. And, you know, you and I will have a chat about what we can do during Sebring week, of perhaps catching up with what's going on at Sebring International Raceway. And it is a question about Proton competition. And I'm just trying to find that picture. And that it is from George El Giorgio. Le Mans entries. Proton competition have an unexpected LMP2 entry. It's not that unexpected, Giorgio, but we'll come to that. And a first reserve with a 963 hypercar. Could that be due to 963 supply issues? If Porsche are able to supply everything to run the 963, could the LMP2 car drop out? First reserve automatically gets the place this year. So far, so well observed, there are actually three Proton cars in the list proper. One 963 in hypercar, two Mustangs, apologies, four in the LMGT3 class. Another Proton Mustang in LMGT3 that comes courtesy of their record in the European Le Mans Series, and that LMP2, which has always been part of the program. The quick question, by the way, was, were Proton given the opportunity to determine which of those cars featured in the overall entry and which one would be on the reserve list? And the answer is no, they were not. That was determination made purely and simply by the ACO. What you've got to look at here is the commercial aspects of those deals. Which of those cars are being paid for by customers? In this case, potentially Ford, and potentially the customer driving the LMP2 cars. And which must Proton Competition find backing for? A fundamentally different commercial prospect. And all I can tell you in return for that one is, of course, there are full season deals in place for the two WEC Mustangs. My guess is there's some Ford support for a third car in LMGT3, and in LMP2 there's a full season deal in place for a second hypercar for a Le Mans appearance only. That, my friends, is something that Christian, Michael Reed and their fabulous team would have to find a very significant amount of backing for. And in a packed season, packed with challenges, it might just be quite a relief that they don't have to do that. Always presuming that no one else drops out, of course.
And there we go, friends. That is an episode of the Week in Sports Cars. I have been. I'm a has-been, actually. I'm the has-been, Marshall Pruitt. That is not a has-been. That is the, all caps, Graham Goodwin. Thanks again for listening, y'all. We have a whole 12-hour race to run here and more to opine about next week. I get home Sunday evening, Graham. Home for a couple of days and then off again, third race weekend in a row. But in between the getting home and the going away again, you and I will get back on the horn, talk about Sebring and whatever else might be on its way. So I'm on the phone, brother.
I will indeed. Let's say good night and good afternoon or good morning wherever you're listening for this one around the world. He has been Marshall Pro. I have been Greg Good. We want to say thanks again to Fast Technologies, to the Justice Brothers, and to TorontoMotorsports.com for continuing their backing in this fine endeavour. This has been the Week in Sports Cars. It's part of the Marshall Pruitt podcast collection. And we'll be back with you after Sebring next week.
Oh, I should also mention, I think this is episode 1499.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Yeah. That's exciting.
Later today, I need to record the Week in IndyCar.
I think that'll be 1,500. So,
I'm not far away, my friend, from 10 million downloads.
Yeah, an intervention, I think, might be needed. But yeah, like you need a great outro, and then I screwed it up because I had.
That's fine. And good luck to everybody in Florida this weekend. I hope it's going to be another fantastic Sebring.